Good morning, everybody. It's good to be with you. Yo, thank you, Jaycon. I appreciate that. We want to welcome you this morning, especially if you're a guest here. We hope that you find Crossbridge as welcoming to you. We hope that you find our service this morning relevant to where you are, to what's going on in life. And I hope that just like everyone else around you and everyone who's watching online, we welcome you too. But I hope that you find yourself taking one step forward in your faith in Christ Jesus this morning. Last week, we started a new series here at Crossbridge called Future Family. Future Family. And I want to thank you all so much for the feedback that we've gotten. And it's been really interesting feedback. I'm not going to say good feedback or bad feedback. I'm going to say interesting feedback, because as people have continued to come and talk to, you know, the staff about this, what we've gotten is not families coming to saying, my future family is going to be awesome, or look how awesome my family is. But what we're getting is a lot of like, it's really nice to know that everybody else's family's messed up too. Like, ah, good. So you understand that this is Crossbridge. We have this idea that we talked about last week of having this ideal family that we want and the reality that we live in. And I want to tell you that this dysfunction and this tension in between, it's hard to deal with. After last week and preaching last week and saying, here's the ideal, let's go after the ideal, can I tell you how quickly real hit my life? Real hit so quickly when my son comes whining to me and I get home and I'm already tired and, you know, I'm hanging out with a couple and it was a great time to be with them. And when they left, I have a very solid tradition in my house of Sunday afternoon nap. It's important. Yeah, woohoo! That's right. You know, you work for a church when you're like, Sunday afternoon nap? Yes. You're tired. You're ready to just crash. And I didn't have that opportunity because I found that right after this couple had left, it was time to enter into family mode again. And I'm pushing Eileen and getting on my wife a little bit about, like, you need to make sure our kids are ready because you're going to youth group and I've got to cart kids to soccer tryouts and then you're doing this and I'm doing this and school starts tomorrow. And I'm starting to explode a little bit. And I'm like, this is not ideal for future families. This is not ideal. This is really raw, real. And I thought, this is so hard to apply to everyday life. Why is this so difficult? And is this just me that has to deal with this? And I'm in the car. I've got my youngest with me, and she goes off what feels like a half a mile away to try out for soccer. And I'm left surrounded by all the parents who got suckered into being there that day. And now there's dozens and dozens of parents. And what I start to hear is the very struggle that I had getting here is the very struggle that they experience. There were parents talking about the need to clean out cars because every meal has been eaten in there. There's the conversation of marriages that just aren't doing well. And there's the tension of dealing with kids. That's just tension, kids. They're not obeying. They're not listening to what we need them to do. It was like real life had hit right on the center of the soccer field. And I thought, it's so nice to not be alone in this. Now, real looks different for everybody. Your real looks different than my real. Real right now, maybe it's divorce or separation. Maybe your marriage is on the rocks. Maybe real is the countless amount of parents, young and old, who are raising their children all alone. Real is the kids who aren't behaving and listening. Real is the struggle with trying to start a family and having difficulty in that process. Real is having older kids. And now you find yourself in a grandparent place, and you're watching their families go through the wrestling match that you went through, and you're doing everything you can to say, I want to help you. But real is they don't want to listen, and they're making their mistakes. Real could look like right now you've got a spouse who doesn't necessarily believe what you believe. And you're trying to figure out, how do I help them? They don't want to come to church with me. They're supportive, but not, they won't be here. Real may even look like this morning you've got a family that's doing really well. Things are really good. But in the back of your mind, you're just waiting for it to crumble, because that's what happens. You see, there's a huge difference in this space between the real that we live in and the ideal that we're going after, this future hope of everything that works and everything that's right. And we try, when it comes to the real, when we look at each other, we normalize what we're dealing with, don't we? We normalize it and we say to each other, it's okay. Everyone has those issues. Everyone deals with those things. You're not happy in your marriage. It's okay. Over 50% of people get divorced anyway. It's somewhat normal. So it's just part of your journey at this point. And we normalize things, don't we? We live in a culture that normalizes almost everything. We don't like to feel bad about anything. It's why we give all our kids trophies, right? They don't even have to win anymore, and you get a trophy. I don't know who started this, but as a very competitive person myself, I want to take that trophy and throw it at whoever started it. Like, don't give my kid a trophy for failing. They failed. That's how they're going to learn. No, but they participated. No, they cried on the sideline. You don't get a trophy for that. You know, that, why do we do this? But think about it. Kids know it's not important. Why? They throw trophies out. If everybody gets a trophy, it's not a trophy, is it? But we do this, we normalize pain because we don't want anybody to feel it. And when we look at each other and the dysfunctions in our families, we start to say things like, it's okay. It's fine that everything's crumbling in your family. Everybody deals with those things. And you and I know that normalizing it isn't the right thing to do. And here's how I know that we know that. When you dream about the future family for your children or your grandchildren, or when you were young and you were starting your family, did you have those normalizations as part of your dream? No. No, none of us. None of us enter into a wedding day or the day that your kid is born or enter into a relationship with someone for the first time and you're like, oh, I hope that this crashes and burns. And it's okay because everyone else's is too. None of us do that. We all dream of the ideal. We all want the ideal. And just when we say this is it, we talked about last week that Jesus comes along and he says, I know this is ideal, but I'm going to raise the standard even higher for you. Something so, so big to go after. This oneness, this unity in your family. This is what I want from you. And we all look and go, well, I can never get there. I can't do this. And the bottom line is that Jesus always taught and pointed to an ideal. But he refused to condemn anyone who fell short of it. He would not do it. Jesus was okay with the tension in between the real and the ideal. Now, last week we talked also about the Old Testament and that if you start and you read through the whole thing, those first 39 books of the Bible, there's not one good family in it. Not one that you would say, I want my family to look like that. And then when you get to the New Testament, those 27 books at the end, you look and say, well, there's no good families there either. So what do we do? Well, Peter and Paul, they're great. They write a lot of the New Testament that we read. And they start to take all the things that Jesus talked about. And Jesus really pushed hard on one specific topic all the time. All the time. And it was love. You look at the people around you and you demonstrate love to everyone that you can. So he's all about loving God with everything that he's got. He's all about loving people who are around him. And if that sounds familiar, it's because we talk about it almost every week at Crossbridge. This is the ethos of Jesus. It's about love. And so therefore, we will do everything we can to celebrate that. And in a culture where family had a really different dynamic than it does now, Peter and Paul take a look and say, how do we take everything that Jesus talked about and look at all these little pockets of churches, what do we do to apply it to them? How do we help them right where they're at, especially in their families? Because things seem to be a little weird. They seem to be a little off based on what Jesus talks about in love, because women, children, you really have no value in this culture. And so when Jesus and then Peter and Paul start to talk about what it means to love in the context of family, what they unpack is revolutionary, revolutionary to this culture. We summed it up last week with four things. Here they are. Husbands, love your wives and be considerate. Do you know my wife? It's okay. Wives, submit to your husbands. Mm-mm. Children, Obey your parents. I see you smirking. They have good ideas, I promise. Fathers, don't irritate or exasperate your children. You may be thinking, don't exasperate my children. They exasperate me. I get it, but this is the ideal. This is the ideal that is held up for us in the New Testament of what a solid family will look like. And so let's just have fun this morning, okay? Let's just go after. If you look at this list, and there's one thing on here that you're thinking, this is the most politically incorrect, I cannot believe it's up there, you know, bullet point, which would you choose, especially for the women in the room? Go ahead, tell me. Submit. Yeah, you don't want to say it. You're like, it's up there. It's okay. Talk back to me. It's wives, submit to your husbands. You know, this is a weird one to put up there because we live in a culture. It may be different around the country, but what I love about New Jersey and being a suburb of Philadelphia on the northeast side is we have some pretty bold women. And I'm saying that, so I'm recognizing where you're at, ladies. You're awesome. But we have some very strong women in our culture who really, they carry themselves well. And when we look at this, we see this as well as a lot of people in our culture. They look at something like this and say, well, that's why the Bible's irrelevant. It's an old book with absolutely no use and context to today because this doesn't seem right. Well, the actual verse that this is found in is in Ephesians 5, verse 22. And this is what it says in that verse. Wives, here's the full context, the full verse. Submit yourselves to your own husbands as you do the Lord. And there's that key word there, submit. This is an uncomfortable word for us in our culture, male or female. We don't like submitting. We don't like this idea of like, I will take a step back to you. And we have this issue here because it says wives. Now, ladies, I'll be honest, it doesn't happen much, but there are times that men will come and they'll say, Jimmy, what about this verse in the context of my marriage? This is for my wife. And I want you to know that a lot of times I will look and say, okay, let's just stop for a second. Who's this verse addressed to? It's addressed to wives. So let's let wives deal with wives' verses and husbands and dads deal with husbands and dads' verses. I mean, if we go back to that list of four, we got 2 out of 4, gentlemen, 2 out of 4. If we just focused on those two, I think our families might look a little different. Let's let the ladies work on lady verses. Men, you focused on your verses. There's enough for us to deal with. We don't need to be policing each other. But this verse is important because this is an application to a principle. This is an application to a principle. And it's important for us to understand that. This is the ideal, and this is what we're going to shoot for. And so what I want to do is take a step back. Look at the verse that comes before this, because that's what's going to make all the difference in understanding this verse. Let's take a step back to Ephesians 5:21. It says this, submit to, what's those two words? Okay, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. This is giant. Paul has now taken a principle that Jesus has been preaching of love. And he's saying, how do we apply this to the church? How do we apply this to the family? It's really going to look like this. I want everyone to submit to everyone. I want everyone to submit to everyone. And then when we get to that next verse, when it says, wives, I want you to do, that's just the application. Okay, there's going to be a list of husbands do this, wives do this, dads do this. It's the application of this. So often we forget that when we take a verse out of context in the Bible, it really makes the Bible look bad and Christians look bad. That verse is so important to understand, that wives submit to your husband in correlation to Ephesians 5:21, that we are to, what's the first word? Submit. It's the same word. It's the same word. So who is this applying to? Everyone. It applies to you. It applies to me. And this was revolutionary. Like I said, revolutionary for this culture to say, wait a second, you want us to all submit to each other? Yes. Everyone is to submit to everybody in your family. And the big idea behind this is mutual submission. Mutual submission. Everybody submits to everybody in the family. And then Paul says, let me tell you what it looks like. Wives, husbands, children, dads, here's what you're supposed to do in mutual submission. Does that make sense? Okay. The wives submit verse. I just feel like I have to say this over and over because in our culture, it's so easy to look at this and say, that's why the Bible doesn't make any sense. That's why it's useless. To me, I look at this and say, that's why the Bible is so important, is because it's teaching principles 2,000 years ago that we need to be reminded of today, that everyone is called to submit to everyone through mutual submission. This is the ideal. This is the ultimate when it comes to, if you pursue Jesus here today and you would call yourself a Christian, this is what our families would look like. This is what everyone should see. And if you're here and you're not a Christian and you're just trying to figure things out, number one, thank you for being here. And I want to tell you the most awesome thing about this is, this can apply to your life, whether you know Jesus or you don't know Jesus. Okay, this is an option for you to kind of say, hey, I'll kind of check this out. If you're here and you're a Christian, there's no option. Sorry. There's no option. This is a mandate that we are to submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. This is what Christian families should look like. This should be the benchmark for us. And there's always going to be what's real, right? There's always going to be the what's real. And then there's going to be a tension going after this mutual submission idea. Because what you're saying is, I'm going to leverage all my assets. I'm going to leverage my time, my power for your benefit. Whether I'm the father or the mother or the sister or the brother or the cousin or the aunt or the grandfather, it doesn't matter. I am going to look for ways to get up under the burden that you're carrying and help you with that. Now, why do we do that? Because that's what Jesus did for us. We carry this burden through life. And Jesus doesn't look and say, ooh, that looks tough. No, he takes a second person role. He submits and comes underneath and carries that burden for us. He leveraged his resources, his everything, to carry our burden. He gave up all his authority, all his position, and he leveraged it for the sake of us. There's a sense in which he put us first. I think about the passage in John 13 when Jesus is with his disciples, and it's the Last Supper, and in that scene, he takes off his outer robe. Here's the king of all creation. All things have been created in and through him. Everyone in that table understands this is the rabbi, the teacher. They've been following him, and they're following everything that he's gotten. Like, he can change the weather. He can heal people. He multiplies food. He raises the dead. And this miracle man, the creator of heaven and earth, takes off his robe, and he wraps it around his waist, and he starts to wash the disciples' feet. He starts to wash their feet, setting an example for them. And in verse 16 and 17, he says this after. He says, very truly I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. When he says those things, he's like, I need to remind you, no one's better than anybody. Stop thinking that you're better than anybody else. We're all on the same page, right? Everyone submits to everybody. In that context, he should have had his feet washed, right? This is the king. That's how it should have gone. And instead, the king gets down to wash the feet out of submission, mutual submission. And then in verse 17, he looks at him, he says, now that you know these things, you'll be blessed if you do them. Do what? Well, you mutually submit. You get underneath authority. Whose authority? Everyone who's around you. Everyone who's around you. Peter's in this room. He knows what's going on. As a matter of fact, he's like, no, you can't do this to me. I should be doing that to you. And it's like, nope. Jesus says, this is the way it has to be. And now that you know these things, you'll be blessed if you do them. You'll be blessed if you do them. And so Paul takes it and he applies it to families. Submit to one another. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. So what does it look like in everyday life for us? Mutual submission. Mutual submission will change our families. And this is just my opinion, but I'm believing more and more that whether it's in your family, your business, your neighborhood, a group of friends, the most powerful family or the most powerful relational dynamic is mutual submission. When a group of people can come together and they can say, basically, I'm going to loan you my influence. I'm going to loan you my power. I'm going to loan you my authority. I'm going to loan you my status, my wealth, for your benefit. It's going to change everything. It allows whomever is giving up to look more like Jesus. So when Paul comes along and he says, when it comes to families, and when it comes to families living out the message of Jesus, here's what it looks like. Submit yourselves to each other out of reverence for Christ. People will see Jesus in your family when you submit to one another. The message of mutual submission is, I'm here for you, not for me. The message of mutual submission is, regardless of where we fall in the hierarchy of family, whether it's father, mother, daughter, sister, brother, uncle, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, I am here to leverage who I am for you. I'm here to leverage what I have for your benefit. Nobody in a family is more important than anyone else. We're going to mutually submit to each other. I understand when I say that, there's probably some going, but I'm mom and dad. The buck stops here. I want you to understand that God has given you a sense of authority in your house. We're told how to parent our children, right? We're taught in Scripture what we should do as parents to train our children up in the way that they should go so when they're old, they won't depart from it, that there's discipline involved. It doesn't mean we stop and go, whatever you want. Peeps for dinner is fine. That's not mutual submission, okay? I don't want you to hear that. We have an authority that we need to walk in that's been given to us from Christ, but too often we try to gather it ourselves, don't we? To feel in control, we feel like we have to have power. And so we need to figure out how do we demonstrate mutual submission when we have a tension of ideal, real, and not sure what to do? I think there's one question that we can ask. Just one question that if everybody in our family were to ask it, everyone asked it to everybody else in your family just once a day, one question, it would change your entire family forever. It would change your future family, your kids, your grandkids, your great-grandkids. Just one question. If there was a question that would do that, would you ask it? Because I think there's a question that we can ask that takes mutual submission and puts it into everyday context for us. Here's the question to take it to the next level. What can I do to help? What can I do to help? What can I do to leverage who I am and what I have for you and for your benefit? What can I do to help? I can already see some of you going, Let's just practice it together because you can ask it here and no one's going to ask you anything yet, okay? So if we practice it here, although if you're watching online and you say it too loud, someone's going to ask you for something, so wait till after, okay? All right, so on the count of three, we're going to practice this together, all right? You ready? You look nervous. It's okay. No one's going to ask you for anything yet. You ready? One, two, three. What can I do to help? All right, I can see some of you not saying anything. No, okay. So when I say some of you, I love you very much, but men, you can open your mouths here. I need you to be able to ask this question because we have the hardest time asking this question. And there's reasons for that. We'll get to it in a second. We're going to do it again. You ready? On the count of three. One, two, three. What can I do to help? It's not that bad, right? See? It's just a couple words, six words out of our mouths. It's not that big of a deal. But I want to tell you, this question is a game changer in families. This question, if everybody asked it to everybody else in your family just once a day, it would change your family. It would change everything in your family, because you know what this is? This is a question that says, I am here for you and for what you need. I am loaning you me. Now, for the kids in the room, for those who are in middle school, high school, young adults, I'm going to talk to you just for a second. If you're a parent in the room, you can earmuff, okay? This is not for you. This is for them. And you can't bring this up with them later, okay? Okay, so listen. Here's the deal. If you ask your parents this question, they won't know what to do with it. Okay, they're not going to know what to do. If you stop and you say, Mom, what can I do to help? First, they're going to, like, bring their jaw back up, okay? You're not allowed to listen, okay? That's what they're going to do first. And then they're going to stop and go, because they're not ready for it. They're probably going to say nothing the first time you ask. You can smile, walk away, and go, I did what Pastor Jimmy said. Okay? You did it. You did it. I promise you, if you ask this question and you genuinely mean it, what can I do to help? I'm loaning you me. What do you need? It will change the way you view your parents. What it says to them, what they hear when you say that is, I recognize you're carrying a lot, and maybe I'm not the easiest kid sometimes. What can I do to help? I'm lending you me. You will earn so many points, it's not even real. I promise you. I promise you that. If you really, really want to earn points, when your parents have friends over, interrupt that conversation with, is there anything I can do to help? Oh, let me tell you, you will win on an unbelievable level. You just won the marathon of question asking, because all their friends are going to look at them like, oh, how did you do that? Teach my kids. Teach them. I'm telling you, it will be unbelievable if you can actually get this and you start applying this now, looking at your parents saying, what can I do to help? When you start to have children, if you start this now, demonstrate it through life, they'll ask that question because you've lived out that question, okay? They'll ask it because you started it. It will change your family for the future, I promise. Parents, you can end your muff. Husbands, wives, this gets hard for us, okay? I understand that for many of us, we're nervous to ask this question. But I'm telling you, this will change your marriage. It will absolutely change your marriage. We can be manipulative people, can't we? Maybe you're not. I am. Without the right heart, this question can become a power grab. It can become a sense of, I need to start to keep score. All right, maybe you keep score in your house. I've done 3 good things for you today. What have you done for me? Type of scoring. And we start to look at our behavior with each other and keep track. And when we're on the losing side of that hashtagging, this question says, I'm going to fall even further behind. We don't want to ask it then. If you want a successful marriage, you have to ask this question. You have to ask this question in every circumstance, at every moment. When you don't feel like asking this question, you need to ask this question. When you feel like you've done everything that day and all you want to do is sit and watch a show, you want to sit and play on your phone, you have to ask this question. You have to. And here's what I love about this question. What this question does when we ask it, the root of this question is, I think when we go back to our wedding day, when you chose at the ideal time, do you remember when things were ideal that first day in marriage and you got to party all night? And then things start to fall into real. But on that ideal day, when you said, I do, you made promises that put the other person before you. You said, I will do everything to honor you in sickness and health till death do us part, and within years it comes to, but that's not fair for keeping score. I've done more than you. What happened? What changed? We stop asking the question, what can I do to help you? What can I do? And when we ask this question, it brings us back to when things were ideal and says, my interest is you. My interest is your well-being. Everything that you are, I care about. I want the best for you. So what can I do to help you be the best you? What can I do to help you? What can I do to help you? It will remind you of your promises. You may not remember your vows and be like, I know I said something important. That's okay. When you ask a question like this, the heart and the root of it is, you matter more in this life than I do. I am giving up and leveraging everything I have for you. For parents, we need to ask this question of our kids every day. We have to ask our kids the question, how can I help you? Not with just homework, not with little projects around. Maybe your kids get overwhelmed. This week I had a situation with one of my children that was coming off the bus in absolute tears because of a birthday present they got that they left at school. And it was a really important thing, a book for them that they wanted and they needed. Yes, my kids read a lot and they're dorks, and I'm 100% okay with it. I love it. And a book brought them to tears. Can I tell you my natural reaction when my kids come to me and they ask for help? I view it as an interruption. I do. I have certain things that I have to get done in my day, and when I'm doing certain things and they come and say, Dad, can you? I look at it and say, stop asking me, I need to. And I view it as an interruption. I confess that to you, and I tell you that because I'm not the best at this parenting thing. But when I stopped and I was like, you know what, I'm preaching a message on this, there's probably, you know, demonstrate it. See if this works. All week I've been trying to ask this question, and it's not gone ideal. It's not been the best all the time. But in that moment, instead of snapping at my kid and saying, well, you should have remembered it, it's your fault, and my natural tendency is, well, suck it up and wait till Monday. You'll learn your lesson. That's what I do. I stopped and I said, what can I do to help? I don't know. Just stop for a second. What can I do to help you right now? Dad, can you take me back to the school? Maybe my teacher's there. Okay. I will leverage my dad role. I will leverage my gas, my time, and throw you in the back of the car to go get a book you forgot. We walked into that room, and her teacher was excited to see her, to see me for some reason. I'm like, hey. She was so appreciative of my daughter. And when my daughter got her book, we got back in the car, and she says, Dad, I probably shouldn't have made as big of a deal about this as I did. I just really wanted my book. Thanks for taking me. What did I have to do to make that happen? I asked six words, a stupid question, that demonstrated mutual submission. It doesn't work out that neat and that nice every time. There's no way. But there's enough times when it does work out. When we get home, she looks at my wife and says, what can I do to help? Why would she ask that question? Well, because I helped her. And then later on in the night, my wife gets to look at someone else and says, what can I do to help you right now? And all of a sudden, we're looking at each other saying, what do you need from me? Because I'm here to help you. It changes the way a family works because you're no longer looking, saying, stop being a nag. Stop being an interruption. No, I'm here to help you. Yes, we parent them and we need to discipline them and they need to learn lessons, but not as much as we think all the time. Sometimes we're just downright mean to our kids because they're interruptions to us, and we, instead of stopping and saying, what can I do to actually help you right now? What's the root of your issue? Because I'm here for you. It changes our families. And I know this seems all ideal, right? You're like, Jimmy, that's great. But that's not Tuesday in my house. Tuesday's here. And so I have to leverage who I am. I have to leverage my authority. I have to do all of this stuff. I can't ask that question. Do you know why we don't ask that question? Do you know why you don't ask that question? Because you're selfish. And so am I. We don't ask that question because we're selfish and we're worried when we do it that it's going to require something of us. Guess what? It's going to require something of you. And when all of humanity is crumbling, I imagine God looking going, these are bad decisions. And Jesus going, Father, what can I do to help? Jesus, you don't want to know. Dad, what can I do to help? You don't understand, Jesus. This is going to cost you. What can I do to leverage my position as the Son of God to help? I need you to submit and give your life for them. Okay. Yeah, it's going to cost. It's inconvenient. But it will change our families. And when our whole approach to our family is, if I can get you to do what I want you to do, if I can get you to behave the way that I want you to behave, I will be happy. You might be large and in charge. You might feel like you've got all power and authority, but I promise you, you will never, ever, ever be happy or satisfied with your family. Because happiness does not equate to getting everybody to do everything that you want them to do. That's not happiness. Happiness, especially in the context of family, is mutual submission. Mutual submission. It's willing to loan yourself, your total self, to everybody else in that circle. And you know that when everybody does what you want them to do, you're still not satisfied because your needs change. Wouldn't it be nicer to have someone on the other end who says, what can I do to help you with those needs? Rather than us demanding things of people. You need to do this. Do it my way or no way. That's not mutual submission. That's not what Jesus demonstrated. And here's the good news for us this morning. If you're here and you're a Christian, this is it's not good news for us because this is your and I mandate. We don't have a choice in this. This is what Jesus modeled, and if we call ourselves Christians, we better model this. If you're here and you're not a Christian, the good news is it still applies to your life. And if you want to take this and you're like, all right, I'll give it a whirl. I'll try this, but I don't want it to be a church thing. Wait a couple days, okay? Wait a couple days and then start asking it in your house and see how it starts to change things. And you'll be like, this actually works. Like my family's changing. It's not even taking that long. This is kind of cool. When you hit that this is kind of cool moment, just remember, that was Crossbridge. And then when it starts to get messy again, we'll care for you in those moments too, okay? Because it just is messy, but it's worth it. You can ask this question regardless of where you are in your life. What can I do to help? What can I do to help? It's so simple. And men, I know I said it before, but I feel like I need to specifically request this of you. You need to ask this question. And I know the fear is you're going to get dumped with a honey-do list. Right, you're going to get dumped with this list of things now that you have to do, and you're like, I don't want to build that furniture. I don't want to fix this garbage disposal. I don't want to clean out that room. I like my garage, the mess that it's in. Leave me alone. And we're worried that we're going to get a list of things. We will. Some of it needs to get done. But we need to ask this question. I know we're fearful of giving up whatever power and authority we perceive that we have. But our call is to love our wives like Christ loved the church. That means he gave his life up for her. He submitted to her. It doesn't mean that you lose authority and control, whatever you want. I don't care who wears the pants in your family or whatever that means. All I care is that you love your wife with everything you have and you're willing to ask that question. Ladies, wives, don't dump on your husbands. Don't give them a list of 100 things you need done and expect it done tomorrow. You can't do that. You will kill this question and push them right away. It is so hard for a man to ask this question because we don't like submitting, especially in a culture where our women are strong. We feel like we need to hold on to some power. I'm just being honest with you, okay? You need to give roles, and you need to ask the question, what can I do to help? And when they, men, don't answer you, it's okay. It's okay, because we don't like asking for help either, okay? We don't like to ask how we can help sometimes, and we don't like asking for help because we're really good at doing things on our own. So if we don't answer you, it's not that we don't care. We haven't learned this yet. It's hard for us. So be patient, and it's going to take some time. And the last application is for the kids who are here. When your parents ask you and you ask that question, if they give you a role, if they give you a job, do me a favor and just do it right away. Because if you ask and they give you something and you're like, all right, I'll do that tomorrow, doesn't work that way. Okay, timing is important on this question for all of us. Timing is important. And the last thing I want to leave you with is this. At the moment you feel like you don't want to ask this question, the moment you feel like I can't do this right now, that's probably the moment you need to ask it the most. That's probably the moment you need to ask that the most. And I dream about being part of a church that submits to one another, that our families demonstrate mutual submission. And when our families go into the community, they say there's something different about those families. What is that? And we have the beauty of not even having to use words at the time, but saying Jesus has made a difference in my house, and I will submit. I will submit. I dream of that. What can I do to help? Will you pray with me as our music team comes back up? God, I confess to you that it is hard for me to ask this question sometimes because I like my time. It's hard for me to put the energy and effort in when there's certain things in my life that I know I feel already stretched. And when I ask this question, more will be asked of me. But I'm reminded that you stretched out everything for me. You gave it all for me. You knew when to say no to things, but you knew how to put yourself in a place of submission. So I ask for that tension between what's ideal and what's real for us. That we would be able to ask that question. I mean, it's so tangible today. Just today we can say, what can I do to help? If we all ask that of everyone in our house, we would look more like you. And when we look more like you, our families are different. Love becomes the center of what we do. The I'm giving up who I am for you becomes a part of a whole team mentality in our houses. God, I'm thankful you asked that question for us and that we get to demonstrate that as well. I pray that you would bless our future families as we ask this question. We love you, and it's in your name we pray. Amen.